If you would have asked me, do you think he'd kill you? Yep. That wouldn't have surprised, I don't think, anybody, because he would follow me. If I would go do something with my friends, he'd follow me outside of their houses just to see if I was really there. For him to murder me, that wouldn't have been as surprising, but that he actually took the boys, that I didn't see coming. I mean, that kind of blindsided everybody. I mean, I didn't, even thinking back now, I just didn't think that he would ever touch those boys. So.
I left more times than I can remember. I probably left 5 or 6 times before I finally left for good. And by the time I did that, we had 2 children together. I came back because I didn't know who I was without him by that point. I think he kind of stood for who I was somehow. He controlled so much that I didn't know life any other way.
My stomach told me, my gut told me it was not the relationship that I wanted to be in. And shortly after, I considered trying to get out of it, and I found out as well that he did drugs and I didn't do drugs. That was kind of what gave me my, okay, it's time. It's time to end this. And it was then that I found out that that wasn't an option. That was probably the first time he told me if I was going to leave, he was going to kill me.
Oh gosh, I lied to everybody. My family and my friends. And I would hide. A lot of times he would grab me by my neck and I would have bruises around my neck. So there was times where I would have to wear a scarf or a turtleneck, like high collared shirt, because I had bruises on my neck or my arms.
Probably kindergarten is when I realized it, when my dad ripped the phone off the wall, kicked the TV in, and ripped the screen door off in just a matter of moments because he was upset about something. I still remember that to this day when I was in kindergarten, and the neighbors were out there watching, and I knew that our family was different from that moment on.
The nature of domestic violence and the fact that it happens within intimate partner relationships is one piece that makes it invisible, because people don't want to interfere with that because we think that it's private. What happens in somebody's home should stay in their home. But I also think that it's kind of this social construct where people who have this kind of power over other people don't want people on the outside to know about it. And typically the victims of that type of violence don't want people to know either. Because it is embarrassing, it is scary. You don't want people looking at your abusive partner like they're fundamentally flawed. As far as the community goes, it's easy to not want to deal with this problem. It's easy to not want to hear about it because it's hard to hear. It's not fun stuff.
You've been listening to Invisible by Design, a community conversation about domestic violence on Northern Community Radio. We thank the survivors who came forward to tell their stories and our partner, Advocates for Family Peace, for helping us create this programming. You can hear the full stories of the survivors we spotlighted on our website, kaxe.org. We're independent media. We're locally produced. You hear the stories of the people who live in our community. We're shedding light during our membership drive, shedding light on things that are sometimes dark, but things that matter to our community. We appreciate your support. Your support is what makes programming like this possible. You can become a member now by calling us at 800-662-5799 or online, kaxe.org. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks so much for your support of programming, and thanks for listening. Here now is Steve Downing and his reaction.
The series, Invisible by Design, produced by Heidi Holton and John Bauer, is some of the most powerful radio programming ever on Northern Community Radio. In fact, on radio anywhere, ever. I long ago learned that where we live is among the most dangerous places on the planet for women and children. I saw the numbers. They were appalling. But they were abstractions. I knew they were true. The documentation was solid, backed up by peer-reviewed reporting standards. Still, I didn't know anyone who was being abused by a husband or boyfriend or father. Now I do. I don't know their names, but I know their stories after hearing them on Invisible by Design. The stories turn the numbers real, and the adjective appalling doesn't touch it. Listening to these survivors and to the people in the field who deal with this issue day to day leaves you with a pervasive sadness and a sick, physically sick feeling that lingers. And yet, not listening hasn't been an option for me. The programs are so well done and so important, I have felt compelled to catch every segment. I have been shocked. I've wept. I've gotten really, really angry. And I've acquired a sense of communal shame, communal responsibility. I don't know what the answer is, how to change a culture that hasn't figured out how to eradicate something so manifestly wrong as domestic violence. But I do know that not talking about it, not taking the stories seriously, is hazardous. Indeed, it's deadly at times, as we have learned from Invisible by Design. One of the key consistent messages we've heard on the show is, if you've witnessed or are experiencing domestic abuse, follow up now. Call someone. Call the police. Call Advocates for Family Peace, or the Northwoods Coalition, or the Women's Center of Mid-Minnesota, or any of the other agencies working on this, or call me.